jump quickly into some work sessions because I'm going to lose my quorum, probably, as some of the Democrats are going to go meet with the governor this evening. Is that right?
Yes, at 5:15.
Are there, is there pizza or anything?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think there's beer. Darn.
Well, then I'm not coming. So based on that, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2170.
Oh. Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. 2170 passed out of the Civil Subcommittee this morning with the -4 amendments. In the meantime, we've now got -5 amendments that I believe Representative Walker will tell you about. And I would also like to let the committee know that I was able to get an opinion back from fiscal, and there is no fiscal on 2170 as amended with the -4s, and I don't think the -5s will change that.
Is the Representative Walker, the Representative Cheryl Walker, or the Representative Vicki Walker?
Vicki Walker.
Representative Vicki Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the committee's indulgence, and there was a coming to Jesus meeting after that meeting this morning with certain members of certain departments. And the -5, there are just very, very minor changes in the wording that the Department of Revenue felt was necessary, even though this was already something they were doing in their administrative rules. But nonetheless, the -5 is clean, ready to go. I'd like to just tell the committee why we have this bill. There's currently no statute that provides due process to a debtor who disputes that a claim has been liquidated and turned over to the Department of Revenue for collection. I had a constituent who had a problem when a library book at the U of O was burned in a fire. The U of O assigned the claim to the ODR at a value that they chose. The constituent was not given an opportunity to dispute that value. It was simply assigned to a revenue agent who became, in essence, the judge and hearings officer and continued with collection agency while all the while the debtor is disputing the amount of the claim. My constituent wanted notice of assignment of the claim and a right and a request for a hearing and an opportunity to determine the validity, and he wanted collection action to stop. So we drafted House Bill 2170. The original bill as drafted had an enormous fiscal impact. Additionally, the DOJ, Department of Justice, and the Oregon Department of Revenue testified at the hearing on March 7th about a new policy they implemented on September 1, 2000, at the Department of Administrative Services by the Oregon Accounting Manual. And the reason they implemented that new policy is because, as Mr. Loudon testified, the Accounts Receivable Core Committee identified that there were not consistent processes for hearings at the agency level. This manual sets out the definition of liquidated and delinquent accounts, and this is what now amounts to the -5 amendments. We've simply put it in statute so Oregonians have due process. This morning, as I said, we passed the -4. Now we have those tweaks in the -5, and it's ready to go, and I would appreciate a due pass to the floor.
Thank you, Representative Walker. In the effort of appropriate political correctness, we call it now come to a higher power meeting.
As
come to a Jesus meeting.
Thank you,
Chair.
I assume that Representative Walker has moved the...
You said that?
Yes, I did.
Has moved
I was
the
not politically correct.
Was that a moving of the -5 amendments,
that
Representative Walker?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
She has moved the -5 amendments to House Bill 2170. Are there questions? Hearing none, is there any objection to the adoption of the -5s? They're adopted. Representative Vicki Walker moves House Bill 2170 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Any discussion? We're going to suspend with the roll calls unless there's objection today because of our time. Seeing no objection, and I think everyone is here. So, Representative Dingfelter is excused today. I'm sorry. Shannon? Will you mark Representative Dingfelter as excused? Thank you. House Bill 2175 for work session. Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2175 also comes to you from Representative Vicki Walker, passed through the Civil Subcommittee this morning with a 4-0 vote. Representative Ringo was excused. The -2s were adopted. I believe, and there's no fiscal impact. I'll just defer to Representative Vicki Walker to discuss the bill.
Representative Vicki Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Council. You accurately described this bill. There is a dash two and nothing beyond that. This bill is a great little bill. It's good public policy for Oregon. It allows a debtor to exempt the earned income tax credit that's due them under the federal tax law should they file bankruptcy or should they have any collection action put upon them. The federal government, when it enacted the earned income credit in, I believe, 1973, one of the reasons for doing so was to help low-income debtors with their rising food and energy costs. As I mentioned in the subcommittee, that's never more evident than now. There is a Supreme Court decision that allows the Support Enforcement Division the opportunity to intercept earned income credit for child support should there be any back due child support owed. So there is no objection from that department. No one else objected. The collectors were not objecting, and I think this is just a really good bill for Oregon. Typically what happens is trustees in bankruptcy have to go after the poor debtors. These are very poor people, and they go after them for this earned income credit. And they don't like doing that, but that's the state of the law. So that's why I brought this bill
Good.
Forward.
Thank you. Is there questions for Representative Vicki Walker on this bill? And the dash two amendments were adopted in the subcommittee, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So we have the bill as amended in front of this committee. Is there any further discussion? Representative Walker, Vicki Walker?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I recommend we send House Bill 2175 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Walker moves House Bill 2175 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move. Committee, we're going to go back briefly. I'm going to open possible reconsideration and work session. Do I have to do a suspension of the rules on that, Representative Shetterly?
I mean, to reconsider?
To reconsider.
To lose one?
Well, no. 2884, as you recall, moved out, and then we got the fiscal on it. So just to make sure we do this right, the chair would request a suspension of the rules for purposes of reconsideration of House Bill 2884. Is there any objection? Hearing none.
Chair, I move that we reconsider the vote by which we passed out House Bill 2884 to the floor.
Representative Shetterly moves that we reconsider the vote by which we passed out House Bill 2884 to the floor. Is there any discussion to his motion? Is there any objection? I'll now open a work session on House Bill 2884. The bill is back in front of us. Colleagues, this bill, we believe, didn't need to go to fiscal because it had an $18,000 fiscal. When we got the fiscal, most of those funds are other funds that are listed in the million-dollar amount. They will be recaptured by the fees being charged, but in order for this to have the place it needs in their budget, we need to send it down to the Ways and Means Committee. Otherwise, they've got to come back to get their budget placement to the E-Board. So for efficiency purposes, it's not about having it go down there and die. It's about having it go down there and find a spot on the line item of their budget in order for their budget planning. So with that, the chair would move House Bill 2884 to the floor with subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, do you want a due pass on that?
With a due pass recommendation. Thank you, Representative Shetterly. Is there any discussion on my motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, and show Representative Ackerman and Representative Ringo is excused. I've got still Representative Walker and Representative Lowe. How long am I going to be able to keep you two before you're going to abandon
me? Mr. Chair, I'll oblige you and stay for a bit.
Okay.
I'll keep the governor waiting.
Well, maybe Representative Devlin.
She's busy.
We're in committee, Representative Devlin. All right. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 2809. Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2809 passed out of the sub this morning with the dash twos adopted. I've just talked to legislative fiscal, and I don't have anything written up, but they tell me that it would add a 0.75 FTE with an expenditures of $114,709 with revenue of $125,000. So increased revenue, but an expenditure of $114,000. I guess that's substantially less than what the agency originally told them, but we never had a fiscal statement, and she didn't have an opportunity to write that up. And I missed who was the carrier of 2809.
King. Representative King will be
on
the floor.
But here in the committee.
But here. I will take care of it.
Okay.
The council did a good job.
Okay, thanks, Representative Walker. I guess my question is, with that information back in front of us, despite that the revenues are going to exceed the expenditures, I'm sensing that this is still one we need to send down to the Ways and Means Committee so
yes.
we can get into the budget.
That's what the fiscal representative just told me.
Right. So they wanted to go to Ways and Means.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Cheryl Walker?
Yes.
Have we adopted the dash twos instead?
Yes. Yes,
okay.
We adopted the dash two amendments, and the bill, the issue that had come up was the fact that there was very little conformity in the pre-needs trust and the preneed funeral industry, and some abuses that had occurred. So this sets this system up that whereby it will provide auditing and certification authority from the Secretary of State Audit Division, and it will actually streamline the process and have a little more oversight than it had before.
Thank you, Representative Cheryl Walker. Mr. Brennerman, you're in the audience. I know this is a bill that you've got an interest in. Were you anticipating this bill needing to go to the Ways and Means Committee?
No, I have not.
Okay. I think the bill does a very important thing, but I don't think that with those kinds of numbers I can avoid it necessarily going to Ways and Means, if only so they catch the expenditures and the revenues on the same side of the equation when it gets down there. Representative Walker, do you want to make the motion?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion that we move House Bill 2809 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation.
With subsequent referral to...
Subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Great.
Excuse me.
That's all right. Just want to make sure. Representative Cheryl Walker has moved House Bill 2809 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative Vicki Walker.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment on this bill because I had personal experience as the court reporter on these cases that from which this bill arises. They were some funeral homes down in the southern Oregon area, and it was egregious what happened with the pre-need trust funds. The cases went into bankruptcy. Fortunately, everyone was paid off. The Department of Justice worked very hard on that, and I was prepared to bring legislation this session if no one else had done that, and I was very pleased to see that all the parties got to the table and worked on this because pre-need trust funds are very important to consumers who pay ahead for those funeral expenses, and it's one heck of a shock when you find out your loved one dies and you've got to deal with this problem. So I appreciate everyone who worked on that.
Thank you, Representative Vicki Walker. Is there further discussion?
Is there any objection to the motion?
Okay, hearing none, the bill goes to Ways and Means. Yeah, go ahead. Come on, Marilyn.
Is that what you want to
do? Yeah. Let's do these two. Hold on this one for a while. So we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2396.
Thank you. House Bill 2396 creates a pilot mental health advocacy program, and
the one rural, one urban, and other counties as funding permits. This bill was originally envisioned to be in the long-term care ombudsman program, but it's been amended to be placed with the Protection and Advocacy Center. It's anticipated that the Protection and Advocacy System will secure funding for one half of the cost of the program, and the bill also carries an appropriation of $150,000, which is anticipated as the matching funds to get the program up and running. This is a volunteer advocacy program. It does not replace the role of an attorney, and the advocate would serve with the consent of the allegedly mentally ill person throughout the entire 180 days of the commitment.
Thank you. And the carrier from the sub today?
By default is Representative C. Walker.
Representative C. Walker.
Council has explained very well what the impact of some of this will be, but it provides that a mental health advocate appoint volunteer designees to with the local screening committee, and it also specifies the people responsible for informing the allegedly mental ill person of the availability of these advocacy services. So I think this is a very good thing for us to have in our mental health process.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative C. Walker on this bill? The dash threes were adopted in the subcommittee, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, the dash threes were adopted.
Okay.
The dash twos were not, nor the dash ones.
Yes, Representative Lowe.
I have a couple of letters in my bill file that date back to March and had some opposition to putting this in
Do we have any other notes on that?
Thank you, Chair, Representative Lowe. Yes, the long-term care ombudsman's concerns got addressed by removing the program from them. It will now be a program that the Mental Health Division will contract the program out with the Protection and Advocacy System. I am not familiar with what the Alzheimer's concerns are. As far as the concerns of NAMI, this bill came from the support of the unanimously from the Civil Commitment Work Group. I did receive a letter from Philip Chadsey, who was the NAMI representative, indicating that he did not concur with that recommendation. I understand that there has been some split opinion on this from NAMI, and I think there were several NAMI members that weren't representing the legislative committee but were individual members that spoke that they did not support the NAMI position against the bill.
Does that answer your question, Representative Lowe?
Very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions for Representative Cheryl Walker?
Thank you, Chair Williams. I forget which chair I'm sitting in. We do this twice a day.
I understand.
Sorry. Chair Williams, I move that we pass House Bill 2396 as amended with the dash threes to, excuse me, I better ask, does this have to go to Ways and Means?
Yeah, I would too. I would anticipate it's got a fiscal. Do I see?
Okay, I move that we.
Well, we've got the 150 matching funds.
Okay.
Okay, I move that we pass it to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Cheryl Walker moves House Bill 2396 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion on the motion? Representative Vicki Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to compliment Council for all of her hard work on this bill in the interim. I served on the interim work group for a while until my duties were required elsewhere on a daily basis, but trying to get back here. But there were a lot of good people involved in this, and I'm very pleased with how it worked out, and council should be commended for all of her hard work on it.
That is very true. She's put a lot of time into these bills.
It was great under pressure.
Yeah.
Ever I've seen it.
Yeah, we really do appreciate it.
With that, is there any other further comments on the motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill will move to Ways and Means. House Bill 2398, we will perform a session. Council.
Thank you, Chair Williams. This bill is known as the Comfort Information Bill. This specifies procedures for the release of certain information about persons going through the commitment process by the custodial facility. It would allow for the release of information with the individual's consent. The only exception to that is if the individual is unable to consent. Certain family members may be advised the person's presence in the facility unless the physician determines that it's not in the person's best interest, such as an individual that perhaps was a victim of domestic violence. It does provide that the consent may be oral or written, and it must be noted in the person's medical record.
Thank you, Council.
Representative Backlund was the carrier, if I recall.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that I could add anything to Council's explanation. It is interesting to always have a chance to learn something new in terms of, at least in this vocabulary, comfort information. That was good. And so, but at any rate, the purpose of the bill, I think, is admirable, and I don't think there was any opposition to it, and I'd recommend that we pass it.
Good. Thank you, Representative Backlund. Are there questions for Representative Backlund or Council on this bill?
Hearing none. Representative Backlund, do you wish to make a motion?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2398 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Backlund moves House Bill 2398 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on this motion? Is there any objection? Hearing none. The bill will move. Last one we have.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to carry that?
Oh, yes, please, Representative Backlund. Thank you for reminding me. I appreciate it. Well, I'm just trying to figure out the schedule. I'm trying to maximize my time while I've got the good representatives who are missing their free pizza and unlikely beer, and I don't want to make them wait. We're gonna pause here and go back up to the schedule because I want to do this in the time frame we've got. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3675. That's actually Ms. Chartel's bill, and she's not here, but I can explain it. She'll be back in probably if she hears me open this bill.
Yeah, there she is.
House Bill 3675, Council. I know. And, you know, the great thing is that when we jump around, we keep everybody sort of on their toes. I'll just go ahead and start. What this bill would do, colleagues, is that it would authorize the Legislative Assembly transfer money from the state lottery fund contingency reserve to the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund. The long and the short of it is, it would allow us to take resources that are currently in the lottery's contingency fund, a portion of which, at least, is being currently reserved for the purpose of purchasing new video poker terminals to the tune of about $40 million, and that would transfer it back into the account, which is essentially the general fund account for lottery dollars. This is a bill that I brought forward primarily along with the other folks who co-sponsored it to engage in a discussion about whether in our current economic and financial situation as a state, the best use of our resources would be in investing in new video poker terminals as opposed to doing some other things that we might do with those resources were they contributed to the general fund. There are two people here, Chris Lyons, the director of the Lottery Commission, and Mr. Hooper, who is, I'm going to get your title wrong, but he works in that job with Chris. for her, as I understand.
Public Affairs.
Is it Public Affairs? And I'm going to give them an opportunity to come forward and chat in a minute. I'll tell you what I think I understand about how this process has worked.
And I originally became aware of this contingency reserve by my service on the Revenue Committee, when we would get these annual or these quarterly revenue forecast updates, and there would be this amount of build-up reserve in the lottery fund, which had been designated for contingency. And as I learned a little bit more about it, it was essentially money that was used primarily, or that some of this money was being held back for the purchase of these video poker terminals, replacing terminals that they currently have and have been in service for quite some period of time. As I understand it, the plan was that it was going to take about 4 years for them to raise the $40 million by essentially lowering the transfer rate. In other words, transferring a little less into the general fund and keeping some for this purchase. The argument, obviously, for replacement is these machines are starting to wear out. It's also that they're having problems on some of them getting parts. And the argument was that some of these machines aren't paying off as well as they used to because people aren't enjoying the games, and some machines are better than others, and that sort of thing. But the fact of the matter is that they were able to get the $40 million in 2 years as opposed to 4 years because the revenue stream from the lottery was actually pretty good. So they built the money up quicker. My belief is that in the current set of circumstances we're in, the replacement of these video terminals, while it might make some economic sense if you were running the lottery as a business, as Ms. Lyons is required to do, isn't necessarily good public policy in the long run, as we're having to make some very difficult choices. And so that's what this bill would do. Certainly by now all of you have implied with a copy of an opinion from the Attorney General's office suggesting that because of the restrictions that were constitutionally implemented at the time the lottery bill or measure was first passed, that what I'm attempting to do by this bill is unconstitutional. And they, in fact, may well be right. Nonetheless, we are going to engage in a little bit of dialogue on this subject today and maybe a few more times before the session's over. So with that introduction, I'm going to invite Ms. Lyons and Mr. Hooper to come forward and let the dialogue begin. Thank you, Chris. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chris Lyons. I'm the director of the Oregon Lottery, and with me today is David Hooper. He is our public affairs manager. I do have some testimony that I would like to share with you, and then we can engage in this conversation. Actually, Mr. Chairman, you did an excellent job of laying out the issues and have frankly cover the good portion of what I'm going to communicate to you in this testimony. I wanted to begin my testimony by basically answering some questions for the record about the lottery's contingency reserve. And again, Mr. Chairman, you did a pretty good job of laying it out, but I'm going to go over it in a little more detail. So what is the contingency reserve and why does it exist? The lottery's contingency reserve is much like a private sector business's operating line of credit. In our case, it is comprised mainly of administrative expense funds that we have retained as a reserve for future needs. Like many well-managed companies, the lottery has retained these funds to meet its financial obligations and to make investments in infrastructure. The Constitution says two significant things. First, the lottery is a self-supporting, revenue-raising agency that is continually appropriated. Second, the lottery's expenses can exceed 16% of total annual sales. In addition, the Constitution does not allow the lottery to borrow money. Therefore, all of the lottery's operations and investments in games and technology must be funded from within the 16% administrative limit, which includes our contingency reserve. Frankly, as the chair has indicated, the Attorney General's office analysis of House Bill 3675 concludes that the bill is unconstitutional. But from the lottery's perspective, our authority to accumulate this cash reserve for future purchases is really key to our solvency and our long-term success. The Oregon Lottery is a very successful business operation that generates over $600 million per biennium in net profit for public education, economic development, parks, and natural resource programs. Many of these programs involve long-term bond debt, which are backed by lottery revenues. Like a private sector business, our stakeholders, including bond rating agency and bond holders, expect the Lottery Commission to ensure that it is continually profitable 20 years into the future. The Constitution gives the lottery director the responsibility to manage and operate the lottery. Without a doubt, our ability to make reasonable and prudent investment in games and equipment is key to successfully managing and operating the lottery. There are really three major components of our contingency reserve, and I wanted to talk to you about really what they are. When I joined the lottery in 1995, our contingency reserve was $24 million. It was made up entirely of non-cash, non-liquid assets, representing funds that we had invested in the ownership of a physical plant or building and in equipment. In 1997, the Lottery Commission raised that cap to $45 million to retain sufficient funds in reserve to pay our monthly bills. In 1998, the Commission raised the cap to $95 million to save the funds necessary to make long-term, overdue, and much-needed investments in revenue-generating equipment, video lottery terminals. Why does the lottery have cash set-asides to pay expenses and meet its transfer obligations? As I mentioned, a portion of the contingency reserve ensures that the lottery will have sufficient funds to pay its monthly operating expenses and still meet our quarterly transfer commitments. As you know, the Office of Economic Analysis projects lottery sales and net proceeds at least 18 months before the revenue is actually generated. Basically, the legislature commits these funds to state programs betting on the come. But what happens if these revenues aren't realized? What happens if players tire of some of our games or our retailers don't sell as much product as we anticipate? Unavoidably, funding of public education, economic development, and parks and natural resource programs must be cut across the board in the middle of a budget cycle if this happens. I lived through this nightmare in 1996. During the 1995 legislative session, the legislature allocated projected lottery transfers of $643 million. About halfway through 1996, it appeared that actual lottery transfers would be $100 million below what had been spent and committed by the legislature. This decline was due largely to the opening of several major Indian casinos around the state. Suddenly, the lottery had more competition for the entertainment dollar. After many newspaper headlines and much consternation by policymakers about the state's dependency on lottery revenues, the emergency board and the Department of Administrative Services had to cut budgets. The actual shortfall ended up to be $68.2 million, which means we transferred 9% less than originally projected and allocated. As a result of that significant event, the Lottery Commission decided to set aside $30 million in a contingency reserve so we could pay our bills and meet our transfer obligations. It would be necessary to tap these funds for expenses and transfers if lottery revenues failed to meet our forecast by as little as 5%. The next component of our reserve is tied to revenue-generating equipment. So let me answer the question about why make future investments in revenue-generating equipment, the $40 million that the chairman referred to. As I stated earlier, the Oregon Lottery generates over $600 million per biennium in net profit. Over 80% of that, or $500 million, of those profits come from video poker games played through video lottery terminals. Many of these terminals have been in use for over 10 years, twice the normal life expectancy of this type of equipment. It is aged and obsolete. The manufacturers will no longer support many of these terminals with software, which are games, or with hardware, new parts. If we don't keep the video games fresh, or we can't even keep the terminals running, then the very revenue problems trying to be addressed in the short term will be far worse in the very near future. The $20 million we intend to invest in video lottery terminals should net an incremental increase in profit of about 5% over 5 years. Of course, these additional revenues are not built into the future forecasts, and we don't do that until sales trends and new profits begin to materialize. In conclusion, the lottery's contingency reserve was built at a fast pace by wisely saving revenues available to the lottery for administrative expenses. I'm frankly proud of that accomplishment. It is a product of forward thinking and wise expense management by lottery staff. We saved this money while meeting projected net profit expectations to the Economic Development Fund based on a 56% transfer rate. As a result of this success, we won't have to reduce transfer rates to 53.5% next biennium. We've met every quarterly financial obligation to the state and will be, in fact, returning $10 million more than was expected. Based on what we know today, the Lottery Commission believes these funds in the contingency reserve are necessary for the long-term investment in lottery operations. We have spent 3 years conducting detailed cost-benefit analysis, developing a thorough equipment management plan in order to ensure that net profits you are able to allocate in this session will be there for you in the future. I've been instructed by the Lottery Commission not to deviate from our basic plan. I've had several very pleasant and really reasonable conversations with Representative Williams about this, and he's been very kind and very respectful as we have disagreed on whether or not to transfer this money. And I wanted to indicate for the record that this is something that the Lottery Commission believes is important to the management of the business, and we will do everything we can not only to meet our transfer obligations but to exceed those in future years.
Thank you, Chris. Mr. Hooper, do you have anything to add?
Nothing to add except, members, if you look at the back of page 3 of the testimony handed out, that summary of the contingency reserve that Director Lyons mentioned is there for you.
Thank you. Are there questions for either of them? I'll just, I guess, engage you briefly in just a short dialogue. And this is just as much for the committee's benefit as for you and I, because we've had these conversations already.
You know, my sense is, and I have to look at this,
and I recognize the smart business policy that the lottery is attempting to consider
in making this decision. And I'm not
bashful about saying that I think our dependence over time on lottery revenues
has become a very problematic issue, I think, for the legislature. But when faced with the public policy choices that we're faced with this session, it is awfully difficult for me to justify spending
$40 million on the purchase of new gambling equipment
when we have so many other needs that are potentially going to be unmet. And it's for that reason that I brought the bill forward,
with some likely knowledge that within the confines of the Constitution, I might have some trouble selling people on the fact that
this proposal is constitutional. I've read the Attorney General's opinion. I've had conversations with legislative counsel, and it may be very well and accurate that when challenged, House Bill 3675 would be deemed unconstitutional. But I pursued it anyway because I wanted to have this public dialogue about whether or not we ought to be spending $40 million to purchase new video poker terminals. We haven't talked about the possible plan, and I say possible because I don't believe the commission has made a determination yet as to whether or not to move to line games, or which is essentially a version of video slot machines. But clearly that's viewed, in my mind, of an attempt by the lottery to further expand, if it chooses to go that way, the participation, at least, in gaming by people who are interested in furthering that activity. And I suspect that, and I believe I read in the materials that you provided me, Ms. Lyons, that the terminals that are being at least considered for replacement are also being evaluated based on their ability to appropriately accommodate line games should the commission choose to go there. Am I right about that?
Mr. Chairman, the terminals that we have today are the old and obsolete ones. We could actually put some line games on if we wanted to. When we are looking at new terminals, and we are, in fact, testing some new terminals, we are not testing line games. We are testing poker-type games that are similar to the ones that we have. Our current machines and any future machine that we bought would have the ability to offer line games. I think the distinction between the technology is the line games that we could offer today on our existing old obsolete equipment wouldn't be as, say, dynamic as you would find in a casino, where the newer equipment, they have more memory, more power, would be able to handle a more robust game should the lottery choose to offer those kinds of games. So, as we have spoken, the issue for us is the equipment, the ability to offer new and fresh games, but it isn't specifically tied to whether or not we are capable of doing line games or adding the line games.
And I appreciate the clarification, but I'm correct in saying that the new equipment, the new terminal equipment, would in fact at least allow you to offer an enhanced version of line games that the current terminals would not allow you to offer.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay. Any other questions by members of the committee for either of these witnesses? With respect to the issue of its unconstitutionality, potentially, on 3675, and we may bring this bill back for further discussion, I'll make the committee aware that H.J.R. 66 was first read yesterday, I believe, on the floor, and has been assigned to this committee. H.J.R. 66 would essentially refer to the people the question of whether the legislature ought to have additional authority with respect to the lottery. I'll just read you its summary. Requires approval by the Legislative Assembly of rules adopted by and games authorized by the Lottery Commission. Requires appropriation of money in the Oregon State Lottery Fund by Legislative Assembly. And it would be a referral. That bill has been assigned to this committee, and I intend to schedule it for a hearing for further discussions about this issue, because I do think it's, you know, one of the challenges to this issue, I think, is that while the lottery is operating as essentially this fourth branch out there, we have very limited ability to help the lottery make some of these important policy choices. And so, for example, when the decision at the lottery was made to lower the transfer rate and transfer less money to the general fund, as I understand it, that was a decision made by the Lottery Commission in conjunction with a conversation with a representative from the Department of Administrative Services.
And Mr. Chairman, that is correct, and for the record, I did want to indicate that it actually wasn't necessary to lower that rate. No, we did consult with the department.
But it wasn't necessary, was it?
No, sir, it was not.
Okay. And there wasn't any necessity to come talk to the legislature about your decision to go out and buy new video poker terminals and accumulate that $40 million either, was it?
No, sir. Those conversations and those relationships have been built so that the communication is good and so that the legislature really has an understanding of the amount of money that will be available And so it is more information sharing in form and in fact. We provide the legislature and the executive branch with information about what we believe the transfers will be after we take into consideration all of our operating needs.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Well, I do want to say that I appreciate both Ms. Lyons and Mr. Hoover, who have been very gracious in providing me all the information which I have requested from them about this issue. It is one of very considerable concern to me, and I do believe that were I to go out and grab 10 Oregonians off the street and ask them, with the current situation we're looking at, is buying $40 million of new video poker terminals the right decision, I think their answer would probably be, no, it's not. Now, I have proposed several other alternatives which haven't been necessarily warmly received by the Lottery Commission that are certainly within your purview, short of me either trying to pass a bill or change the Constitution. I understand you work for them and they've delivered that that message. I hope you'll at least deliver back to them the message that I remain both concerned and engaged on this issue.
Yes, sir, and I have communicated that, and I've also communicated to them your gentlemanly behavior and the fact that we are going to continue our dialogue and work together for the long-term best interest of the state.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3675. We're going to open a public hearing on, or excuse me, a work session on House Bill 2394. Which is actually Ms. Odell's bill, and she is not in the room right now. I got a note here. We passed this out of the subcommittee today that Mr. Nickel, is Mr. Nickel here still? Mr. Nickel, you wished to offer some testimony on House Bill 2394. If you please come forward, I'd encourage you, if you could, just to make it brief because of our time constraints.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I do appreciate the opportunity to speak briefly to the concerns that we have. For the record, my name is Bob Nickel. I'm Deputy Assistant Administrator, Office of Mental Health Services, Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. The amendments, as I understand them, would cause concerns about the broadening of information available at the time a commitment process begins. In other words, the amendment allows access to LEDS information for the investigator regarding arrests and not just convictions. And this was one of the differences between 2394 and 2395. The division opposed 2395 because of the inclusion of arrest information. The position that we would stake out is that in this country, a person is innocent until proven guilty, and since an arrest is simply an arrest and not a conviction, that seems to be an important line for us. Secondly, we do have concerns about access to LEDS information and the potential costs. Now, I apologize, I haven't been able to do anything more than a preliminary estimate, but it's my understanding, based on staff's information to me, that allowing the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Program Director to have access to LEDS information would potentially require the installation of a LEDS terminal in each of 32 emergency departments around the state, assembling some fairly quick information, which I think needs to be confirmed yet. This could add up to a considerable amount of money. 32 emergency departments times what my initial estimates are, about $15,000 for the installation, leasing of the line, and installation would run close to $500,000. Without getting more specific, I would just urge caution and additional attention to the potential costs of making the LEDS terminals available in emergency departments. And with that, I will conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Nickel. Any questions? Representative Shirley, do you have any questions?
And just to say, I think I was the one who asked about fiscal impact this morning, and I don't think anyone was quite prepared to respond.
I think the state police,
they just were responding, I think, on their end of the system. And
there wouldn't be any increase.
Yeah, but right. Not really thinking, I guess, there's got to be a terminal on the other end of the LEDS system. And That may be what we're hearing now.
Apart from the fiscal, Mr. Nickel, getting back to the matter of the policy issue, we had over the couple of times this bill's been heard, a reasonably good sense by the committee that this additional language that simply says, for the purpose of making a probable cause determination under this subsection, a community mental health and developmental disabilities program director or a designee thereof shall have access to the law enforcement data system. This was not an egregious violation of anybody's civil liberties. It was one factor that could be weighed in making that determination, that the standard would actually remain the same as to whether or not there was probable cause and that there was a higher likelihood that this would result in increased public safety in trying to essentially ration the services that are under discussion here. And so that was essentially the direction that the committee went with the amendment. Obviously, I'm concerned now, as I always am, sort of in these late-breaking issues where someone comes in and says there's now a fiscal impact of 32 computers that will, or was it 32?
Mr. Chair, that's my understanding. Yeah. And again, I want to emphasize that this is preliminary information, but in the several hours that I've had to look at this, that's the information that has been brought to my attention, and I think it at least deserves further investigation.
Mr. Chair? Representative Chair.
Well, in fairness, I guess, I think the Dash 1's kind of came out of the Margaret.
Yeah, please, Ms. Taylor, come forward. I know that they may have come a little, but these amendments have been discussed. I think at least they've been discussed at my level for some period of time, and I think with a number of the committee members. So I'm not sure that they were any
great surprise. Ms. Taylor.
Yes, it's my understanding that the bill authorizes access. It doesn't implement a program by which the means that each county will enable and put the access into implementation. Each county may be different. Down in Marion County, the information is already available down at the Sheriff's Department and also down at the intake center at the jail. And each county may be able to work out an agreement with its own procedures, so we don't have to have a terminal in each county. This bill authorizes access. It doesn't implement access in each of the counties. That would be a county-by-county arrangement.
Representative Shetterly.
My understanding, I don't know that much about LEDs, but this information can't be transmitted by phone or fax. It has to be accessed directly on the system. Isn't that right?
If I might respond, it's my, Mr. Chair and Representative Shetterly, it's my understanding that it has to be accessed only through the terminal. It cannot, by law, be provided by phone or fax.
Ms. Taylor, does that change your analysis at all?
I would allow each county the ability to work out within that county how they will work it within the system that's available. I think for Marion County, we may work out some creative arrangements with the sheriff's office and with the jail intake staff that would address the problem in that county. The county should be enabled to enter into whatever agreements they can within each county. It doesn't implement a program throughout the system providing terminals.
And to the extent that a county didn't want to step up and provide the terminal, I guess that would be up to each individual county. Representative Shetterly pointed out in line 20 that the bill says that the designee thereof shall have access to the law enforcement data system. So that does make it less permissive and more mandatory in the provision of the access.
So would it satisfy the concerns to change that language to may, or would it be appropriate?
Well, let me ask Mr. Nickel. Mr. Nickel, if it changed to May, does that satisfy your concerns?
Mr. Chair, I think the division would still have concerns on the principle of access to arrest information as well as conviction. That would help ameliorate the costs. I would express one other concern, though, and there's been a lot of concern expressed by people who have reviewed the civil commitment process, is that there are already too many differences between communities, and so we may be setting up inadvertently another change from one community to another, and there might be a problem with different standards then in different communities.
Well, let me tell you what I'm going to do. I think I'm going to close the work session on the bill. We're going to hold it here right now until I figure out a little bit more about how I want to proceed on this, and then we'll bring it back. So at this time, we're going to close the work session on House Bill 2394. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3059. Colleagues, you'll recall House Bill 3059, we heard in the Criminal Committee, requires law enforcement agencies to enter into information about missing children into the database of the National Crime and Information Center no later than 24 hours after having the report, receiving the report that the child is missing. There was an amendment to the bill, and it essentially, as I recall, replaced the entire version of the bill. You'll see it as the Dash 1 amendment, and it says that the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training shall ensure that all police officers and certified reserve officers are trained to investigate and report cases of missing children. When federal training programs are made available to the state at no cost to the state, the Board shall offer the training to police officers and certified reserve officers. Representative Patridge presented this bill with a family whose child was missing, and apparently there were some questions on the time frame. Representative Krieger, are you carrying this?
Representative Vicki Walker, I think.
Yes.
Oh, she was the carrier. She's gone. We'll need Representative Shetterly to step back into the room in order to move the bill. But I think I've explained what the bill did. The case came out of down in Jackson County where the young man had been injected with methamphetamine. Right. It was a fairly powerful testimony. Did you find him for me, Bill? No, unfortunately, he won't. Good. And my recollection, colleagues, is the way this bill got changed was essentially to move from sort of a mandatory period of time in which training had to be, or in which reporting had to be done, to essentially enhancing the training standard when funds were available for federal training. Is that right, counsel?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, good. And we did adopt the Dash 1 amendment in committee. So with that, the chair would move the amended version of House Bill 3059 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Any objection? The bill will move, and we'll keep Vicki Walker. Actually, she's gotten a load of bills today. Representative Krieger, will you carry that bill?
Yeah.
Would you carry that one for me? That'd be great. Appreciate that. And our last bill up today is House Bill 3661.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3661 comes to you from Representative Brown, and this adds quite a bit of chemicals and precursor chemicals to the precursor chemical statute as it relates to methamphetamines. We adopted the Dash. We did Dash 6 amendments. We came in from the Legislative Council's office. We adopted them in subcommittee. The carrier of the bill is Representative Lowe.
The Representative Lowe is excused. Again, this was a bill that got fairly worked over, as you can see by the fact that it's the Dash 6 amendment, which we adopted. In the end, all the parties, the drug manufacturers, law enforcement, the chain drug stores, all had come to an agreement on this bill, and it was primarily related to the issue of these methamphetamine precursor chemicals, which can be purchased over the counter, and how to address that issue. So that's what we do in the Dash 6 amendments. We had assigned it to Representative Lowe as a former chemistry teacher because she was the only one who could pronounce phenylpropylamine. And she remains the only one who can still pronounce that. Please, would you pronounce it for me, Representative Krieger?
No, I just know it's not right. No.
Well, you are right. We had adopted the Dash 6 amendments, and with that, the chair would move House Bill 3661 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, the bill is amended, and we'll keep Representative Lowe as the carrier, and we'll see if she really can pronounce those names. With that, we have worked the agenda for the evening. We are at recess.
Yeah.
Or adjourned, yeah.
Okay.
Recess till tomorrow.